Welcome back to the third and final hour of the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. And one of the real pleasures of getting to do this show on a Friday is that you get to curate the entertainment slot for the last hour. We're going to be talking about what's happening on stage and on screen. And delighted to be joined, as ever, by Michael Leddy, writer and blogger. Michael, a very, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
And anyone who is watching on our live streams on Facebook or on YouTube will be thinking, God, Fionnuala looks very, very different this morning. That's because Fionnuala's not here. Conor Malone from the Ballard Theatre in Ballybuffet is with us on the programme. Conor, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald. Very diplomatic. You said looking different rather than looking better. That's a good move.
Indeed. It's great to have you, Conor, and you're welcome. Conor, I'm going to start with you because one of the most anticipated musical events in Donegal for a long time is finally happening this weekend. Paul Heaton on stage in the Banner.
Yes, and you know, we've waited a long time. This was originally meant to happen back in April 2020.
Yeah.
And it got COVID-ed, which is a verb now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's actually great that he's still coming because the original reason they were coming to the Ballard, Paul and Jackie Abbott, who unfortunately due to a throat condition won't be there on Sunday night. But Paul and Jackie had a new album out and they were doing the Irish tour before doing the UK tour. So it was a whole load of new songs that had never been played live, and they wanted a warm-up venue. So obviously now, 2 years down the road, all these songs have been played loads of times live. They don't need the small warm-up venue before they play the Three Arena. But, and I understand that's the kind of sound people they are. Yeah. They were like, no, we said we'd play. So they're finally coming to us and can't wait.
Yeah, well, there is a certain consistency in this because I completely failed to get a ticket for 2020, and I'm delighted to say I failed to get a ticket for 2023 as well. Me and about 11,000 other people. But I mean, you know, in fairness, there was people queued outside the Ballard from the night before and slept overnight on the footpath, and in fairness, that commitment, they deserve it.
Yes, and it sold out online. We had an online allocation and an in-person allocation. The online allocation sold out in 2 minutes.
Yes.
But when the original gig went on sale back in January 2020, and the night before it went on sale, we had an Americana artist, Jeffrey Foucault, playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was locking up, and it was about midnight. And I came out the front door and I turned it, and there was this little stool there with a cushion on it. I'm looking at it, and this wee Scottish woman jumps into the car and goes, that's mine, I'm first in the queue. And you're like, well, are you going to touch it? So yeah, that's the level of dedication.
But I mean, and Paul Heaton, people know him from the Beautiful South, obviously. They know him from the House Martins before that as well. Yeah. I mean, you know, a legendary musician. And one, he strikes me too as being a bit like Billy Bragg in the sense that I think you're going to get some banter on stage as well, going to get some conversation, going to get a bit of interaction. And I suspect some very interesting stories to be told as well.
Yeah, and like, you know, by all accounts, a very, very sound fella, real man of the people. He's a sports nut. And he's a crisp fanatic as well, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, on the rider, he wants, you know, a selection of obscure local crisps, and the madder the flavour, the better.
Right. I'm sure you managed to find something.
Yeah. Actually, one thing I can't find that's on the rider, if anybody can help me with, I'd never heard of it before, but I need to get some Whitley Neal mango and lime gin.
Right, so, I am by no means a gin expert, but...
we're here till what, 12 o'clock?
Yeah. If anyone knows, for example, Whitley and Neil mango and lime gin.
Yeah.
And if anyone wants to worm their way into Paul Heaton's affections, that's what you get him. If you're looking to secure a ticket at the last minute, get a bottle of that, slip it over to Paul Heaton. I suspect he'll get you in the door somehow. Yeah. We'll get back to you in a moment, Conor. Michael, you're very welcome as always. Let's talk Disney, and one of the big programmes on at the moment is Big Sky.
Yeah, Big Sky has finished its third season. It's one of my favourite shows. This third season has a completely different arc as they do in each season. So people may or may not be aware of the fact that Reba McEntire was the main guest star for this third season, and Jensen Ackles. So they brought in some big heavy hitters, like Reba McEntire, a country musician, queen of country, they call her, going back decades, literally. She's had like 100 singles in the country charts, something like 20, 25 number ones. I was always aware of her as a performer, as a country musician, but although I know she had a sitcom that ran for several years, I had never seen her as an actress until this season of Big Sky. And I absolutely loved her. Since Big Sky finished its third season, she's done a Lifetime movie, which I think is the pilot for a series about a judge who travels around the South, kind of a district court kind of travelling judge, based on a real woman who does this. And I'm hoping it's a pilot for a series because I'd like to see more of her stuff. So Big Sky is a crazy crime drama centred mostly on a private eye and a deputy sheriff who work together solving crimes. Each season has a long story arc, even if you haven't seen season one or season two. But if you're interested in Reba McEntire as an actress, you can totally watch season three. It's typically bonkers. This show is like a guilty pleasure. It's so much fun and so crazy. And the plot twists in almost every episode are ludicrous, but you can't look away. Basically, the storyline involves Reba McEntire playing a character called Sonny, who has a glamping camp so people can go camping in the woods. But it's really glamorous and they've got these, you know, cabins and it's fantastic. Almost every character who shows up is either a murderer or a thief. They've got, there's like a Bitcoin wallet with like 15 million bucks in it and someone has stolen it and the mob are after it and someone else is after it too. And it's crazy. The death toll is extraordinary. But it's such a fun show. I've loved it for three seasons. And Jensen Ackles from Supernatural, one of the coolest guys on TV, one of those really handsome kind of, just those dudes that you just, everybody loves him. He joined the show this season as the new sheriff and he was really busy through the season and really got a lot to do.
It seems a sheriff would be busy in a place
like this. Yes, like
everybody's. Honest. Yeah, it's a bit like Midsummer, you know, must be the deadliest county in England.
Yeah, it does make, between this and Yellowstone, and I was watching them both on Monday nights, it makes Montana look like a place that I'd like to see from a distance because there's a huge, everybody is either murdered because they're involved in stealing money or they're involved with the mob, or if you're on Yellowstone, it's because you trespassed on Kevin Costner's land and he wants to bump you off. So yeah, Montana in both shows comes across as the Wild West.
I've heard Rich Hall talk a lot about Montana in his sets that I've seen over the years.
Yes.
And it never sounds quite as interesting as Rich Hall mentions it somehow. Connor, your Netflix choice is Inside Job.
Yes, Inside Job. I'd say it's a sitcom adult cartoon. And it's one of these, you know the way Netflix and it recommends based on your viewing habits.
Yes.
And then you watch the first episode and you go, what does Netflix think of me?
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And I suppose in 10 years' time we'll be there and we'll have a cashless society and Netflix will have your purchasing details and it'll go based on your lifestyle.
What do you mean will, Connor? They have already, let's be honest about it here.
But Inside Job, basically, the main character is a socially awkward genius called Regan Ripley, who heads up a department in one of the six organisations that secretly run the world on behalf of the shadow government.
Yeah.
And it's basically, in the first scene you see a drunk guy outside the White House telling school kids that, you know, aliens are real and JFK was assassinated by the government. And a limo pulls up and Reagan goes, Dad, get in, you can't be giving out all the trade secrets. Yeah. And it goes from there.
Yeah.
And everything from, you know, flat earthers to, there's actually a lovely episode that you'd enjoy where there's a town in America where they bombard with a nostalgia mist kind of chemtrails.
Oh, right.
So the town is permanently stuck in the 80s. And the reason for this is that so all the, you know, those toys that are actually lethal but were perfectly okay to sell in the 80s, so all the corporations can keep selling their remaining toys and products that are now banned into this town.
So lead paint of galore, yeah.
Yeah, you meet the Gap Man, Grassy Knoll, who actually did shoot JFK. And there's another episode where the six secret societies, Cognito Inc. is Reagan's society, where all the secret societies get together in, what's it called, the Hibernian Grove, is it? The Bohemian Grove.
Bohemian Grove, yeah.
So they meet in Bohemian Grove. Yeah. That's their annual kind of staff get-together party. So it's way out there. It is for adults.
It is.
There's lots of, you know, drug references, sexual references, lots of swearing.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's the child in me. I just find it's interesting, Connor, because
you're speaking about it and you say you came across it because Netflix recommended it based on your viewing. I mean, I have actually seen the first episode because they recommended it to me too. You're welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, let's leave Connor and Michael just to one side for a moment because I want to go to one of the most accomplished playwrights in the north of Ireland at the moment, the author of The History of the Troubles, According to My Da, which has become a very, very popular show, and it returns to the Northwest. It's on in Millennium Forum on tomorrow, Saturday night, joined by the author, Martin Lynch. Martin, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. Pleased to be here.
And it's our pleasure to have you. It's been a huge success, this particular play, Martin. What's the secret to that success?
Well, I always quote a Dublin journalist who interviewed me after he saw it on its very first runway back in 2004. And he said he thinks that it's because when the audience come in at 8 o'clock, they see the start of the Troubles in 1969. And then it flies through in an hour and a half of mad comedy. And by 9 o'clock or half 9 when the play's over, the people will have seen their lives gone by and the Troubles ending. So psychologically, or if you want to say the process that counsellors use with people, if you're traumatised, they've just seen all the Troubles, enjoyed it and laughed their heads off, and at the end of it, it's all over. It's like before that, they only saw some stuff on TV or they weren't sure if it was over. But this actual play, a piece of art, tells them and confirms that it is over.
It's sort of, to an extent, ploughing the same furrow that is ploughed by Give My Head Peace and by the Hole in the Wall gang, that sort of comedic take on Northern Ireland that takes a very knowing look, but it's a knowing look based on the experience of someone that's lived there, that's been there, that knows there is a very serious undertone to what they're talking about, but because of their local knowledge and because of the local experience, has that sort of, has the toolkit, as it were, to bring it into a comedic field, which is a very difficult thing to do.
It is. Well, just before I talk about that, Donal, I just want to say that alongside the Dublin journalist's opinion, the actual real truth is that it's a funny play.
Absolutely.
And people love comedy. Mm-hmm. Now, I would argue with you that although I'm very good friends with the people and Give My Head Peace, that our play is a way above all of that. It's a much better piece of art. It's well written. It's got great characterization. There is a character in it called Fireball who the people of Ireland have fallen in love with. I mean, Fireball, the guy who plays Fireball, Conor Grimes, a Tyrone man, he was in Croatia about 5 or 6 weeks ago and people were shouting across at him in the street, "Hey, Fireball, what are you doing now? You're backing on your horses." And the way that Fireball speaks, he speaks with a slight lisp.
Yeah.
But the guy who plays him, Conor Grimes, in my opinion, puts in a performance of minor genius.
Yeah.
He just has to walk on the stage and the audience fall about laughing. So yes, while the play comes from my own experiences behind barricades in 1969 and during the UWC strike in 74 and Operation Motorman in 72, I witnessed all these characters, all these people around the Turf Lodge, Ballymurphy and New Lodge areas. And it was only a matter of thinking back in my memory to all those times. And here's something, Donal, that I say to people, and they don't believe me. I laughed. We all laughed a lot behind those barricades. The maddest things happened with shooting nearby and soldiers or whatever. And we there was things that threw themselves up that for us to laugh at, you know. And maybe that was the only way we got through those days, as people say. The dark days, you laugh.
But there is and always was a dark humour in Belfast. And it's interesting, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine from Canada who was visiting Belfast. And they said to me, "What should I do?" And I said, "I'll tell you what you should do. First and foremost," I said, do an open top bus tour. I said, but, and this is a big but, do the one that actually has a live guide on board. Because I remember I did one several years ago and the guide on board was live. It's just the best big bus trip I've ever done anywhere by a country mile, because the person that was doing the tour guide, no more than yourself, you know, was local, lived through it, and the commentary was caustically funny. It was black yes. as coal, and it was brilliant. And it was done, yes. you know, it didn't minimise or trivialise anything. But by the same token, it was entertaining while at the same time hugely informative. And I thought that there's an ability, I think, particularly in Belfast, to find that balance.
Yes. Well, the first thing is, I always find that Glasgow, Liverpool and Belfast have very similar humours. They're three very working-class cities. And whatever we've gone through, whether it's the Troubles or even just ordinary living a working-class life, it's been tough. So you look for humour as a way out. But if I could just give you an example of what I came across in the 69-70 period, which the play sort of, I think, epitomises. When we were standing at the barricades in Turf Lodge, with burned buses and lorries in front of us had all been burned, men were waiting on the Free State Army coming up and defending us. Men were away looking for guns wherever they could get them. People thought their district was going to be burned out that night. It was an incredibly serious situation. And then right behind me, in my buffer zone, I felt somebody, I felt his breath on my neck. And he says to me, what's all this about? And I turned around, it's a guy who became Fireball, mod red, ginger hair, bottle glasses and all that stuff. I says, what do you mean, what's all this about? He says, who burned them buses? I says, mate, do you not know there's Troubles on? Oh, no, he says, I don't know about that. Just can have your civil rights demands and your Troubles, but no need to burn buses. I'm down in Kelly's bar playing a game of darts. You know, we're second in the league. So this guy never saw the Troubles. He refused to acknowledge them. He lived his own life, you know. He was into football bats and into playing darts. That's all he lived for. And he saw the world, even though 3,500 people were killed here, he saw the world through his dart teams, playing in the Barney Eastwood Cup, doing football bats, and generally being a very, very funny guy. He works in the amputation section of the Royal Victoria Hospital as a porter, and he burns bodies all day. He burns limbs and arms and legs, and of course he makes great fun of that.
In terms of the show, I mean, it's been on in Derry in the Northwest many times. I'm sure you get people to come back to see it again and again and again. And every time they come back, they get something different out of it. They get a different layer. They're peeling away something more, because it's that sort of a play, I think, that every time you see it, you're going to get a different perspective and you're going to find a different laugh somewhere.
Well, Donald, you've heard the phrase laugh a minute, and that's the way it is. What happens is you're laughing at one line or one story and you miss the next one. So people do come back to rediscover all that stuff. But I had a woman last Monday night, was our opening night, a Monday week ago at the Grand Opera House. 1,025 people. And I mean, it's just incredible. And that was the same every night for a week. She tapped me on the shoulder. She says, Martin, I bet you I've seen this play more times than you. I says, go on then. 17 times she's seen it. She's followed at the Derry. She's followed at the Armagh, Newry, Belfast. There was an academic was talking to one of my colleagues recently. He says he goes right back to the 20s and 30s and the 60s, the plays of Sam Thompson and Joseph Tumulty and all those people. And he says, Martin, we think this play is the most successful play in the history of Northern Ireland. It's been seen by over 100,000 people just in Northern Ireland alone, as well as we've done London and Dublin and all the rest of it. So there's something there, Donald, that people want to come and see. There's laughter, there's humour. People want a good night out. And once they give themselves permission in the first 5 minutes to laugh at the Troubles, we're away at a hack.
Well, it's on Millennium Forum in Derry tomorrow night, and still some tickets available. So get yourself onto the website, get yourself into the box office, and get yourself a ticket. In the meantime, Martin, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
And thank you, Donal.
Our pleasure, Martin. You take care. That's Martin there. Martin is the writer of The History of the Troubles, According to My Da, himself and the two lads in Grimes and McGee as well. It's a great show indeed. I saw it many, many years ago and thoroughly recommend it. 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Before I go back to Michael and to Connor, just want to mention a few things. The Clark family in Cooldaff, they lost their home a week ago due to a house fire. And the local community are running some events just to try and help the family out. There's a fundraising coffee afternoon taking place tomorrow in Cooldaff, and there's a raffle running along with that. So if you can support that, that would be very much appreciated indeed. So you can contact either Breach Carney or Joe Kane, and they'll be able to get you those raffle tickets. And as we say, that coffee morning is taking place tomorrow, Saturday. Also want to mention taking place at the weekend, there is a charity tractor run that's in memory of Patsy McLaughlin, with proceeds to the orthopaedic ward at Letterkenny University Hospital. It's running on Sunday, €20 per tractor. Entry fee includes a burger and drink. It's leaving McLaughlin's yard at 1:30, returning to the Pine Hill Industrial Estate on the mountaintop right beside us here. In fact, we're on the estate, at 4 o'clock on the day. That's on Sunday. Raffle taking place then at 4, and a permit has been granted. So that's a charity tractor run in aid of Patsy McLaughlin, in memory of Patsy McLaughlin, supporting the orthopaedic ward in Letterkenny. That's taking place, as we said, on Sunday, leaving McLaughlin's yard at 1:30 sharp. Now, let's get back to Michael and to Connor. Connor, another live event that's taking place shortly is the latest one from, and just give me a moment while I just reach in and grab my notes, because I put them away and I just want to make sure I have my things right. This is, oh, the professionalism is scary. And is it here? It is here indeed. Angle Days, how to get the menopause energy. I wanted to call her Nuala. I was about to call her. And all I could think of was, I was just going, her name's not Nuala. Her name's not Nuala. Her name's not Nuala. Angle Day. Her latest show, How to Get the Menopause and Enjoy.
She is a Nuala.
Oh, she's a Nuala.
It was a Nuala.
She was a Nuala indeed. Yeah, and the Nuala's may return. I mean, I wouldn't rule out a return of the Nuala's, but all my head would say was Nuala, Nuala, yes. Nuala, Nuala, Nuala.
Yeah. No, this is Anne's new show. Well, she's been doing it for about, I think, 6 or 7 months. And it's another one of these that it's kind of caught the zeitgeist, and it's, you know, it's selling out venues everywhere. And it's exactly what it says on the tin. It's a humorous, comedic, but also apparently very informative show to do with all things menopause.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's been selling out. It's been getting rave audience reviews from both men and women, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't think, oh, I'm a guy, I'll get nothing out of this. Apparently, it's just laugh out loud funny, and it's a riot. And it was funny, you know, if you have the Facebook event and you can send out invites to people.
Yeah.
So I did that last week, and we had a show on that evening, and there was 4 or 5 women came up in the bar and going, what are you doing sending me invites for a show about the menopause? What are you trying to say?
Oh, indeed. I could well imagine.
But yeah, as I say, I think this is another one that is going to sell out. Tickets are selling very, very
excellent.
Well. But laugh out loud, funny. A riot of a Saturday night. Saturday,
excellent.
25th.
Right. Michael.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about CSI Vegas.
Ooh,
I mean, there's so many CSIs at this stage. Vegas is one of the newer ones.
It's a new one, yeah. The CSI franchise was away for like 6-7 years. CSI, the parent show, was cancelled back in 2015, I think. And there was CSI Cyber and CSI Vegas or Miami and CSI New York. They all finished up, and the franchise was gone for a few years. And last year they brought it back. Mm. So CSI Vegas is a new version of the parent show. The first season brought back William Peterson as Gil Grissom, absolutely still one of the great fictional detectives of television of the last 50 years, a fantastic character in his own right. Mm-hmm. Loved that character. So he was there for the first season. So now the second season is running on Alibi on Wednesday nights and Sunday nights. I'm up to date. I'm actually slightly ahead of Alibi. And what's interesting about this season is they don't have Gil Grissom anymore, because William Peterson came back for a season. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really want to do TV. His thing is he built his own theatre in Chicago, I think, and he just wants to do a theatre. Mm-hmm. He left CSI long before it finished. He'd made his money. He wanted to get back to the theatre. So Marge Hellenberger is back as Catherine Willows this season. But what's really good about the show for me is that it's the new characters that they have brought in that are really interesting, and you want to follow those and you care about those. Lex Medlin, a new actor to me, he plays Bo J. Lee, Aria Guerra, who was previously on the Marvel series Hellstrom. They are three of the major new characters that they brought in this season. They're really good. The series has a story arc that wrapped up in this week's episode on Alibi with Catherine for 8 episodes investigating the death of a friend of hers. I love the CSI shows. I mean, they're different to the Law and Order shows, which I also follow and also love. With CSI, you're much more likely to have a high concept fantasy type crime. Yeah. You know, it's not really the real world. Recent episodes had like a chef who was murdered and left in a walk-in freezer. The next episode had a house fire, but the cameras caught Bigfoot escaping somebody in a Bigfoot costume. You know, the episodes, it's not like Law and Order, which is always ripped from the headlines.
Yeah.
I love that, but you know, when you watch Law and Order, you have the weight of the world on your shoulder as much as you enjoy it, because the crimes are grim and often they lose. CSI, they rarely lose, though sometimes they do. But the crimes are always much closer to that Agatha Christie world where it's something, you know, it's intricate. Like another episode from this season had, like, it was pure sci-fi. It had a device that was, you know, firing waves that was affecting somebody's pacemaker, and it succeeded in doing that, but it also cut out something else and ended up killing loads of other people. So it's sci-fi, but done in a low-key sort of thing. The characters are fun. You get a good case every episode, every, you know, self-contained story, as well as an arc. The show is back and the ratings are okay, so I think it'll be back for a third season. And if you've got Alibi, you have Wednesday nights, and I think they show it on a Sunday night, I think it's Wednesday nights, and then they repeated that episode. And they're only, I think they're about 4 episodes behind America.
It seems to me we need a three-way collaboration.
Yeah.
What we need to do is bring three programmes together and have CSI Big Sky Midsummer. We get CSI... We get the style of murders you get in Midsommar, someone being run down by a big, huge lump of cheese or whatever like that. And then we bring it all into, and we make it happen in the glamping camp in Big Sky.
Yeah.
And we get Sunny's the CSI team.
And
we'll
throw
we get
in the a CSI conspiracy team. Theories from inside.
Yeah, we bring
the
inside job as well. Yeah.
Like, where did the cheese come from? Did the government send the cheese?
Oh, absolutely.
What's the theme music for the CSI Vegas? The CSI always has a great theme music.
Yeah, they
it's
always
Who
do.
Again, is it?
It's always, they go with the Who, and they've gone with the, yeah, the Who Are You. They've kept
that. They've kept
that one, yeah. But yeah, they had there was a joke years ago about the CSI shows had the best house band, because every show had the Who, they picked a different song. They had, you know, for, so they've gone back and they've used the CSI, the original theme for this show, even though it's not necessarily the original show, you know, it's not the same show. It only has one character. Yeah. Although the big news, I think, is for February in America, they're bringing back Greg was one of the really cool CSIs. He was one of those minor characters who, you know, in the first seasons of CSI only had a couple of lines in every episode, but you always were interested in the guy. And then by season 5, he was in the opening credits. And then by like season 10, when I stopped watching, apparently he was like...
People call Greg are always cool, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
Totally enough, Ray. Absolutely. That goes without saying. Connor, I want to talk to you briefly about Honor, which is one of the big music success stories of this year, I think. They developed an online following over COVID with videos that they were releasing online. One really amazing video, which was sort of shot in a forest with sort of, you know, it seemed like dry ice. It looked really atmospheric. But four guys from Southwest Donegal, really close harmonies, they have done something unprecedented in terms of venue sales, both with yourselves and on Greenan.
Yeah, and I think it's 19 years now I've been doing this in the Baller, and in terms of, you know, a new band who haven't performed live before, the demand, the popularity, you're right, it's unprecedented. And it was originally, I would have known one of the four, Tom McHugh, and Tom, he would have played at the Baller last year opening for George Murphy. So Tom contacted me and said, we want to do a gig, you know, and I'll tell you how, you know, neither myself nor the lads would have seen this coming, because the conversation as it goes is, right, kind of what sort of numbers would you be aiming for? And he's, listen, we're going to push it really, really hard and we think we'll sell it out. So we put the first show on sale. There was no announcement. There was no fanfare. We put the first show on sale. I think it was about 3:30 on a Thursday. And he just they share the link on their social media. And the first show with no fanfare, no real pushing, just a link shared on social media, sold out in 4 hours. So we said we'd do a second show, and that went on sale. And it went on sale on the Friday evening. Now, our physical box office was closed, so it was entirely online, and that sold out in under half an hour.
Right.
So at this stage, I remember sending them a text going, are you the Beatles in disguise?
Yeah.
And so we put a third show, and that went on sale on Sunday at 3 o'clock, and that sold out in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, we have Paul Heaton here on Sunday night, and when you're selling out a show in 8 minutes, you're getting into Paul Heaton territory, you know. So this was the third show. All of them just instantly snapped up, and still loads and loads of people looking for tickets. Mm. So they booked the fourth show on Greenon, which I think that sold out in under half an hour
as
well.
Yes, it did.
And there's now a fifth show.
There is. On the Thursday, May 25th.
The 25th, yeah. The 25th and 26th. The 26th show was sold out.
The 26th sold out.
Is the 25th sold out yet?
It probably is, because I got tickets. I got tickets for the 25th. It went on sale Wednesday morning. I went online on Wednesday morning, managed to get two tickets. As far as I could see at that point, there was maybe 20 or 30 seats left.
Yeah.
At that point, I managed to get it. So I would imagine absolutely that Thursday is sold
out. But, you know, give On Green on a ring, anybody listening, and see if they have any left. The real, and it's really heartwarming to see, you know, just this kind of surprise success story. And you see so much talent going around, and you go, you love to see them get the exposure and the success that they deserve. And these boys are getting it. I mean, that's over. It's over 1,000 tickets between the Ballard and
Well, easily. And you know, and there is no recorded material. There's nothing. They've not played live together. They're all musicians in their own right, and they've all played. Yes. As you said, they've all played their own gigs in various pubs and clubs around. But I mean, what they've done on social media is really, and it's, you know, sometimes social media can be a nasty, evil thing, but it can also be a real force for good. And this is one of those cases where, you know, it's brought talent to the fore, and great to see it happen.
I mean, I think one of their YouTube videos is over 150,000 views.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they've had a phenomenal online success.
Yeah.
And it's, you see that translate into the live shows. And, you know, I just, you know, I hope now that we'll see them playing and selling out venues the length and breadth of Ireland, you know?
The start is there. And I mean, I think what it is when you have, I love close harmony singing.
Yes.
I love harmony singing. And that's, and their harmonies are exquisite, and they're tight. They're superb musicians. That really does come across in the videos. I mean, they're excellent musicians. And I think what you're going to see is, and, you know, sometimes people will go to a big concert by a big name because they're a big name and they want to put a notch on the, you know, oh, I saw X, I saw Y, I saw
experience.
Z, you know, I was there. And as I found, the older you are, the easier it is to win those kind of conversations, because, you know, I have great conversations with my daughter. Because every time I want to cut her down, I would just say, yeah, I saw Freddie Mercury live on stage indoors in the RDS on the Works Tour. And
I do that with my brother.
Really annoys her.
I have two brothers that are huge Lizzie fans. And whenever they're boasting, I just go, I played saxophone on stage with Brian Downey.
Yeah,
and that just shuts it down.
And funny enough, I was there for that too. That's it happens. No, I was at both Lizzie's farewell gigs in the RDS. And I was at the First Lane, obviously, as well. So I've seen Lizzie three times over the years. It's great being old in that respect. but I digress. No, but it is. I mean, what it is that it, you know, the talent is coming out here, and you know, we're people are buying tickets. I think number one, they want to see great musicianship, and that I think is what we're going to see. And we're in at the start, and you can sort of say with pride, the Ballard is going to be really in at the very start of something that has the potential to be huge.
Yeah, and look, you know, that's what we're there for, to give aspiring emerging artists a leg up, as well as, you know, obviously to welcome the established ones with open arms. But when you see, you know, a group starting off and they have the talent, and when you see it rewarded like that, it's quite heartwarming, you know.
Yeah, I want to give a very quick preview to some mates of mine actually who are playing the Ballard, and I think it's this day fortnight. Marion Ashcroft and Nigel and Swords of Light Yes. Horsecliffe's tribute band. And it's their first gig as, now they play as the Tearaways around Inishowen predominantly, but around the whole of Donegal. And Swords of Light are a Horsecliffe's tribute band. I saw them actually in their very first incarnation. I was at the convention in the Black Box in Belfast in November, where Barry Devlin and Jim Lockhart played with Pat McManus. And they did a Horsecliffe set at the end of the night. And they said that that's pretty much it now. We're done, done, good luck. And the Tearaways were opening that show. And in the middle, Nigel just took out the logo, plonked the logo on the start and said, by the way, we're starting a new band and we're going to... Marion was doing the big build-up and Marion was building up to revealing the name. And before she got there, Nigel just held up the sign, you know, and everyone applauded and she was, ah! It was just a good crack. But they played a really good set.
Oh, looking forward to it.
That, that's on now in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from tonight.
Friday the 3rd,
I think. It's the 3rd of March, yeah, which is 2 weeks tonight. So, yeah, that's... it's good. They're really good musicians. I can verify that. Yeah. So they're great musicians, and I've seen them, as I say, do a couple of the songs, do a lovely version of Stars from Dancehall Sweethearts actually. So right. they're going to go beyond. They'll be doing the Derek Dooms and the Power and the Glory and the Trouble with the Capital T's and all that. But they'll stick in some deep cuts like Stars as well, which is going to be good. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back after this with a discussion about Cardinal, which is on the BBC.
Okay.
Well, we got some respite. It was very windy earlier on this morning with lingering rain and drizzle. Now, that's cleared. We have a few bright and sunny spells out there. Bad news is it will not last. Outbreaks of rain will develop in the west and spread right through the region over the course of the afternoon and into the evening. Strengthening southwesterly winds, highest temperatures 9 to 11 degrees Celsius. It'll be dull, breezy and damp for much of tonight with outbreaks of rain and drizzle. Later, clearer conditions will develop with lowest overnight temperatures 4 to 8. Fresh and gusty westerly winds, they'll be occasionally strong. Tomorrow, breezy, cloudy, scattered patches of light rain and drizzle again, more isolated in the afternoon. Some dry periods and sunny spells tomorrow. Top temperatures on Saturday 10 to 12 degrees Celsius. Now, Michael, you want to talk to us about Cardinal on
yes,
the BBC.
Yes, Cardinal, yeah. I love a good detective story and I also love a good Canadian show. I really gravitate towards a lot of good Canadian products. So this is a four-season murder mystery series based on a six-novel series by somebody called Giles Blunt. Usually when I talk about a TV show that's based on novels, Donal has read, whether it's Bosch or Mallory Towers, you usually read the books.
I haven't read the Cardinal books.
Okay. So it ran on the BBC, ran on BBC Four for a few years. If you're outside the Republic, you can see it on the BBC iPlayer. And if you're outside the Republic, or if your computer thinks you're outside the Republic, you can also see it on the Apple system. The show is one of those shows that Greg talks about not liking much because you've got a driven detective who not only solves the crime, but he's tortured by tragedy in his own private life. It's one of those shows.
They all are, aren't they?
They all are, yeah.
Let's see, he lost a partner, he's an alcoholic.
Yes,
he's
pretty much. Yeah, you're very close, yeah. He's suspected.
He has too much time to the job, his family fell apart.
His family fell apart. He's suspected in the death of a cop in Toronto.
He is Norwegian and called Harry Hole by any chance.
So he's kind of got this hanging over him.
Yeah.
And he's in a city called Algonquin Bay, and he works for the Algonquin Bay Police Department. And what's interesting about this show is, well, there's many things that I love about this show. In fact, it's one of the three shows that are blowing me away this year, together with The Bear, which is on Disney, which is about a chef, which is extraordinary.
I've liked what I've seen of that. It's extraordinary. I love that show.
And also Slow Horses, which is on Apple, which is the espionage show. This is the other 10 out of 10 show that's new to me. So John Cardinal is the detective investigating a serial killer. His new partner, Lise Delorme, is actually investigating him, but he doesn't realise that. We know she's there to find out how corrupt he is or is not. So they work together and they are working on this case, and it's snow and ice and blizzards and misery. And I love every...
Are you sure it's not Scandinavian?
And I
because
love
you've just described right, every I know, Scandinavian I know. Detective book I've ever read.
And I love it. And I've been asking people, I was asking on Facebook, and I know a friend of ours, Rachel, is a fan of this as well, and watched it on its original run on BBC Four and BBC Two. So it's out there in the ether, it can be seen, and I'm sure people are familiar from watching it on BBC. It's just excellent. Billy Campbell, the lead, he's been playing cops since the 80s when he was on Crime Story, and then in the 90s he was on Moon Over Miami as a private eye, RTE show that on Saturdays. And then there was a wonderful show BBC or RTE had on Monday nights called Once and Again, which was it was from the 30-something writers, and it was about people in their 40s finding love after their first marriages had broken up. He was the lead on that. He's done a sci-fi. He's done a load of things. He was on Star Trek as the outrageous mm-hmm. O'Connor. And he not only played that on Star Trek The Next Generation back in the 80s, but he returned to Star Trek Prodigy in recent months to play that character on two episodes. Love Billy Campbell. He's brilliant as John Campbell. Karen Vanass, who I know from Pan Am, she's his partner. Each season adapts a different novel. Fantastic, fantastic show. 10 out of 10 from me. Together with Slow Horses and The Bear, they're
right.
The best
I'm going to have a look at that. I want to talk about the show that's wowed me this year, and that's, and maybe this is me falling for the hype, but I have to say, The Last of Us is the one that's really.
Really?
Yeah, I've really gotten into that. Now, I know Paddy Cullivan would be a very good friend of yours, Connor, and yeah. I know, and I would be friends online with Paddy as well. But Paddy, I know Paddy basically has put up, yeah, it's enjoyable, but let's face it, guys, it's basically The Walking Dead rewritten, which I'm not sure about now. I would perhaps argue with, but mind you, no one argues with Paddy. That man could argue his way out of a paper bag. And the paper bag would lose. But
Paddy probably has a PowerPoint presentation ready of why The Last of Us.
Oh yeah, he's already put it online. he has. He did do a sort of a comparison of the first couple of episodes. Yeah. But no, I think The Last of Us is brilliant. I think in particular the third episode where they focused on the story of Bill and Frank. I thought that was monumentally good, because I thought what they did was they took what, under normal circumstances, if you're running a show like that, the sort of the perceived wisdom would be, here's what you do. You get a little storyline of two side characters. You run it off in about 3.5 minutes, possibly just have Joel telling her the story as they walk through a forest, and that'll deal. Instead, they let the story breathe. They presented it over the course of 40 minutes, and it was phenomenally good as a result. Now, I love The Last of Us. I really think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling it. It's a good show. Myself and Fluna kind of were on the same page about this.
That I noticed that. That's why I said,
I'm going to talk about it. I will say that it's absolutely universally acclaimed. Mm. The outpouring of love and respect for it across Twitter, and you made a great point about Twitter there. I mean, there's good and negative out there, but you can gravitate towards the good if you follow the right people, I think, and you know what you do. No, it is a show that is getting rave reviews from everybody.
Yeah.
Including your good self.
Does that get your back up?
I feel like I've seen it, not only The Walking Dead, which I didn't watch, but I've seen so many shows like this. Jeremiah was the show that Luke Perry had 20 years ago, also about a post-apocalyptic thing. Even the second season of the 90s. No,
I can come straight back to you and say, that plot for Cardinal you just described, your 10 out of 10 show for the year. Oh, what a detective with family tragedy. Was her name not Sarah Lancashire? You know, I mean,
but I always feel like if you're going to do something that's been done before, put a spin on it, do something. And I feel like they haven't for Last of Us. I'll definitely watch season one to conclusion.
Yeah.
Whether I come back for season two is debatable. Yeah. But I just kind of feel like if there's one, they've said they're doing the one game for the first season and they've got 9 hours to do it.
Yeah.
And I know you. Everybody loved that episode.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you can spend an hour doing that, then you probably haven't got a full story for 9 hours.
But maybe they're putting a deserved focus on storylines that don't normally get.
Yeah.
Like, guys, we're running out of time. We really are. Connor, I know there's something you wanted to say before we conclude.
Yeah, I just very briefly. It's my son Jacob's 16th birthday today. I want to wish him a happy birthday. And. One quick question. Is there a TV show out there about a happily married policeman with a good work-life balance that really likes his job?
There is. Midsummer Murders. Yeah, naturally. The greatest detective show ever put on TV.
Was one.
Just before we go, and thank you very much indeed, Michael Leddy, blogger, commentator, writer, comedian, regular on this spot, Connor Malone, theatre manager, writer, actor, saxophone player extraordinaire, and of course... an irritatingly good Scrabble player as well, particularly online. It does have to be said. Thank you both very much.
Thanks very much.
Going to get a really quick 10-second plug in here. Kinky Boots Letterkenny Musical Society in on Graydon Theatre. Saturday night sold out. Friday night sold out. Tuesday, still availability. Wednesday and Thursday, they're going fast. Listen, it's been great doing the show as always. This has been Donal Kavanagh on the 9 till noon show. Thank you to Caroline Orr for producing and for holding my hand. Coming up next, it's John Breslin, who's around the Northwest. But for me, Donal Kavanagh, have a very good day.